Thank you. I thank the organizing committee for the opportunity to speak here. It's a very beautiful place. I plan to give a kind of a survey talk about work that I've been working on myself, with also some other people, of course, and which has to do with these items. There are many technical questions about higher order resonances and so on, and other people are going to speak about that, but I tell you just what I know. So I want to have some simple things to recall. Resonance in parameterized systems. I start with two oscillators, torus and circle dynamics, and they recall a few facts that some of you may know very well, which are in textbooks. And then I start going to some perhaps less well-known results. For instance, the last one, this is the Hopf settlement bifurcation for maps, which we stumbled upon when we were working in climate problems, and we looked at the next case, which is not in the books yet, and it immediately shows how very complicated this is going to be. And so one of the things that that I like to call out is that there is a resonance which is in a which is usually in an open and dense or sometimes residual set of the parameter space, or in fact you have to look in the products of parameter space and state space. And in this audience, I do not have to say too much about quasi-periodicity, which happens on a nowhere dense or meager set, which is a fractal set in a positive measure. And of course, there is also chaos emerging. There's a quite superficial description, and you can add a lot to that. I like to say this. Many people, when you say parameterized systems, they look the other way because they think we are having Hamiltonian systems and we do not need any parameters. So they go on their laptop, they go doing email. But this is included. Distinguished parameters are included, mass ratios. If you can get the parameters from somewhere from your system, this is also counting as a parameter. And many applications, you try to do it like that. But very often, it's also interesting to see what happens when you have external parameters around. So this talk tries to... Okay, first, what is resonance? I give a very heuristic definition. It's not a mathematical definition. I look at two or more oscillating subsystems where there is some rational ratio of the frequencies, and where the motion is compatible with that ratio. And the striking things are, for instance, that the amplitude of the resulting motion can be unexpectedly big. This is what makes resonance interesting and intriguing. And I have some voorbeelden, which is a Dutch word and means example. And I like to, because it's a Dutch, I'm Dutch also, I talk about Huygens's clocks for a little while, and also about some of a few of the resonances in the solar system. You probably, some of you may, many more very interesting resonances, but it's not a matter of, during dinner we can. I like to talk about the nice application of the 1-2 resonance, which is in Spain, Santiago de Compostela, Botafumeiro. Some of you know this because some of you have been there. Can I just ask here, who has ever been there or seen movies about it? There are quite a lot of people. And also I sum with some 2-2-3 spin orbit resonance of Mercury. This is not an exhaustive list. It's not meant to be an exhaustive list. And so this is Christian Huygens, a very nice portrait from the 17th century. And he wrote this book, Horologium Oscillatorium, when Louis XIV was murdering our little children. But he still worked for him because he was the president of the French Academy first. He talked a lot about cycloids and synchronization. But the thing that I'm interested in is this problem. This is a quite well-known problem. And that is that Huygens himself discovered that when you have two almost identical clocks, and they are mounted on the beam, and they are pendulum clocks, pendular, they are moving in the plane of the beam, so to speak, and vertical. Then they have a tendency to synchronize. And even more, and I'm not going to talk about that, but even more, they have to also a strong tendency to go in anti-phase. There's something about that, but this is true. So one of the things you can say about what I claim is that there is a very simple explanation for the synchronization, not for the anti-phase. And this is such a simple explanation. I think it's important for all the people that we are talking to in biology and wherever. These are the tidal resonances. What happens is that by the tidal force, the rotation is slowed down. The tidal force extracts it's not a rigid body, the Earth or the Moon, and so then there's a friction and the tidal friction slows this thing down, and the Moon already has been caught in a 1-to-1 resonance with the Earth, and Pluto and Charon they caught each other, and they go in as a rigid body almost around the solar system. And I have been told by people that this also is the ultimate fate of the Earth Moon system. We will be dead by then, but it seems that it's a mechanical interesting. It's not easy to model this kind of friction. I think I have nobody knows, but it's not easy. The tidal friction that the Moon exerts on the Earth to slowly stop its. And Mercury, it has been discovered by Lascar in Korea quite recently, has been caught in a 2-to-3 spin orbit resonance. So Mercury goes three times around its axis when it goes twice around the Sun. So there's a lot of questions here which I think are intriguing, but I'm not going to talk about. This is the boat to Fumero. I just make a few examples and then I'm going to do mathematics. The boat of Fumero is a church. And this is the length of the church, the longitudinal length of the church. Then there's a pulley, and on the pulley there is this boat of Fumero, which is an incense container. It's a virok, we call it. I don't know what. And it is allowed to swing in the length direction of the church, and there are a couple of guys, strong guys, and they pull it up every time that it's close to the ground. So they have to do this twice as often as the period of the pendulum. And this is a 1-to-2 resonance. This is the application. If you ever need one, this is the application of 1-to-2 resonance. Okay. So we model in terms of dynamical systems depending on parameters. Well, the parameters can be very liberal, liberally chosen. And then we have an emergence of several kinds of dynamics, periodic, quasi-periodic, chaotic, and maybe things in between. And we have bifurcations, phase transitions in between, and this kind of things can be used to model in very many things. And we have worked ourselves on climate modeling, but also we are now working on biological cell modeling. So now let's be a little bit more concrete. And in the beginning, I will still be very concrete. So this is let's look first at two oscillators. The oscillators are described in terms of a phase. So I have two phases. And if I have two phases, I immediately think of a torus. And you don't have to draw that one, because this is just an embedding of the torus in 3D. But if you have this, it's a very general to assume that the Poincaré map is defined on one of these generators of the torus. So this is a very general model, where this number here, it's just a constant term of the Poincaré map, and here this is periodic, and for some reason I put epsilon in front of it. But so. And then this is a kind of very general thing. It's in the book of Arnold, 83. This is a very general way of thinking about resonance. And resonance is equivalent to periodic. For the purpose of this talk. And then you immediately have this nice diagram that you may know because it's quite old. And here, this function f has been replaced by the most important, say, periodic function. And then you have this picture. This is a picture in the parameter plane. And the parameters are, I recall, epsilon is the perturbation and alpha is the rotation number. These tongues are the resonance tongues. Inside this tongue there's a fixed point for the Poincaré map, two fixed points in fact, one is repelling and the other attracting, and they come here, they meet here in a seminal bifurcation, and here it starts with period 2, and also here the period 2 orbits, excuse me, Mr. Chamorro. And so for all, you know this picture, you should know it, and otherwise you don't have to be ashamed if you don't know it, because I've seen many people did not. But it contains a catalog of the circle and therefore also the torus dynamics. So within the times you have periodicity, resonance, phase locking. There's all words that are used by people from engineering and from biology. We are working now with a couple of biologists on some PESO cell, and we are using exactly this language. And we have informed about their, we have asked them about the terminology. It's not fixed. They use synchronization for all the resonances, and they use entrainment for the 1-2 resonance. But if you ask somebody else, and so outside tongues you have quasi periodicity. I take the system sufficiently smooth, so we can use Dangeard theorem to say that irrational rotation. So we have written this beautiful book, Flores Takens, who died about 1 year ago, and we have written. I can only recommend you to buy it, because it doesn't get some money, not so much, but. But these are two papers about a far more general resonance, like with many, many oscillators. And everybody who's watching Discovery Channel or National Geographic or something, you see these fireflies on this shrub, and they synchronize. They've never seen it. I've seen some people. Maybe you do not look at these programs. But what is also interesting here is a Devil staircase. The depth staircase is the rotation number. I don't have to define it, I hope. It's a mean rotation, average rotation. And it is depicted here as a function of alpha for small epsilon fixed. So it relates to this picture here, that at some value of epsilon here, you take a level here of epsilon, and you look at the rotation number as a function of alpha. And then you get this interesting function that physicists also start to recognize in their work, and so this is a funny function. It's continuous, it's non-decreasing, and it's constant on little plateaus. Oh, thank you so much. For all rational values, it's constant. we have written a paper with Carlos Simo and Johan Carlos Tatier about a little bit more general. Let's say somewhat more general. Arnold family, we called it a fattened Arnold family because it's defined on the cylinder. And it's a nice model for homoclinic tangencies. Okay. So we have non-resonance. This is the non-resonance, is the fractal geometry. It has a nowhere dense set, topologically small, positively Berg measure. It's a fractal. By definition of Mandelbrot, because its Hausdorff dimension is larger than its topological dimension. The topological dimension is zero, at least if you restrict to this epsilon, fixed epsilon level, because every point has arbitrary small neighborhoods with empty boundary. And of course, I don't have to tell you this company what happens when you have strongly irrational rotation numbers. Then you have KM theory, and then you have that the conjugation to the rigid rotation is smooth. Okay, so this is a kind of very general setting that I'm going to my own contributions, but a contribution that I was related to soon. But I like just to sketch some background. So the book of Arnoldus I already mentioned. It's still a very valuable book, quite old, but and Mandelbrot he gives this definition of fractal on page 15 for those who are interested. And then I also like to remind you the book by Oktoby. It's a famous Oktoby from Oktoby in Ulam, And he wrote a beautiful book, and I always say, if you don't have it, you have to ask it for your birthday. And then you can read in it when you want to, when you go to bed. It's a very beautiful book. It tells you things about the real numbers that that not everybody knows. But I was so happy that I learned it when I was a student. So let's go back for a while to Huygens's clocks. So if you model, you use the torus circle model for weakly coupled oscillators as before, then when the two oscillators are almost identical, then the frequency ratios are almost one. So the rotation number is 0 mod 1, and that means that the parameters alpha, epsilon are in the main term. This is a very general, you have almost nothing to know. You only have to know that the first Fourier exponent of this function f is non-zero. Then you know that this has a transversal opening. And then you get this picture, and you know that it the parameters are somewhere in this tongue. It's a very huge open set. And so this is an explanation partly an explanation for the entrainment of one clock with the other. And I like to point at the universal nature of this explanation. If you want to know more, it's interesting. Many papers have been written about this. This paper by Bennett and other people, it even appeared in the proceedings of the Royal Society of London. And it is a paper that already existed when Huygens wrote his stuff. A very rough explanation goes like this. I did not work it out. It goes like this. If this beam can also move, then there are basically three normal modes. One is that the beam moves, the other is that the pendula go in phase, and the other last is that the pendula go out of phase, in antiphase. If the beam moves, it causes friction. So that's not. If they both move together, then there's also the beam also moves. So there's also friction. That this is not a mathematical proof, but you can imagine that it explains that the only one that which is stable is the antiphase one. Okay, now let me do some slightly more general thing. I'm talking about Hopf, Neimark, Zecker. I know that people talk about Neimark, Zecker, but I'm looking at it from the viewpoint of the von Kremer and the system. So you can look at the Dresden oscillator, but you can also look at its von Kremer. And you assume that the von Kremer has a fixed point, and that the eigenvalues of the derivative are close to pass through the unit circle near a rational angle, and then you have exactly the same kind of phenomenon. In fact, Arnold knew this, and the Arnold family had been made as a kind of simple model example for this situation. Apart, of course, for the strong resonances. The strong resonance of 1-to-1 and so on, the Bogdanov-Tarkins, and they have been studied separately. And locally you have a geometry with the universal singularities. That is to say that you can set a node, fold, other bifurcations, and globally you have this fractal geometry. So this is a picture of the, say, the Q7 in this case. So the 2 over 7 or 3 over 7, we can see that from these pictures, Arnold tongue, and you also see the dynamics which belongs to that depicted. You have invariant circles with periodic motion that disappear in the 7-mode bifurcation there. And I refer now to Tarkus' paper because he did the remaining, largely, not all of them. And the resonances with the denominator 4 are still... not mathematically. There's a lot of computer stuff around it, but it's a complicated thing. So if you look at the more degenerate case, a mildly degenerate case, so the suppose that you have the case we were talking about before, Hopf, Neimark, Zecker, that the Hopf coefficient is 0, the third order term. What to do then? Well, then you can do a bifurcation analysis using contact equivalence, singularity theory, and you can find this this kind of thing. There's a lot more, but this is one of the things that you get in the parameter plane, and you see the corresponding dynamics nearby. I can give you the references are on the next page. One of the things that you can see here is a so-called Arnold flame. This is not invented by me, but by Bruce Peckham in the United States. He worked on examples. He looked at just as an oscillator with many parameters, and then he found these things. So this guy was a guy from a more applied vein, and he said that you can see now that singularity theory can serve some good purposes now and again. So that was a compliment from this guy. I was very, very happy about that. And so this is what we found. So you have the Arnold tongues. When it gets a little bit more difficult, you get folds, cusps, swallowtails, and you get a Whitney umbrella. It's a very complicated array of things. And I wrote down some papers that we have written about this. And so one of the things that we had to invent, this was in a paper with Kulubitsky, was the contact equivalent singularity theory that fits with this, and this is a ZQ equivalent. So we did something that most of you know how to do, namely we took co-rotating coordinates or van der Pol transformation. I like that because van der Pol is also Dutch. But it is really going to a Coupling space. And I want to preach a little bit, give a little sermon about coupling spaces, because they are so very useful. You can have equivariant singularity theory, equivariant KM theory. It just follows from Moses' 67 paper. I think we have found a simple and very short proof of the Fayot's theorem on Arnold and Hermann, just by using this theorem, this setup. But here we use it for the singularity theory. And so now there are some further examples. There's some further examples. They deal with this is also a subject that we worked on for some time. It is parametric resonance. I come to the Bota Fumeru very soon, because you can say that this is a very simplified model for the Bota Fumeru. I have a pendulum, and the frequency of the pendulum varies periodically with time. It's a very old kind of model. And you can take just cosine of t, then you get a nonlinear version of Mathieu's equation, 1867. And you can also do nonlinear things, and you can also do square case. And here the thing that's of interest is whether the trivial periodic solution is stable or not. I'll give you an example soon, but if the trivial periodic solution remains stable or unstable, it becomes hyperbolic, and the bifurcation in between, these are the interesting things. And also here, subharmonic bifurcations, it's better to do this with the notion of coupling space and to average and to normalize in the coupling space. I think Arnold said, Stieg speaks about averaging in ciphered foliation or something like that. I never understood what he means, but this is how I think you have to do it. We have some papers about this coupling space idea, where you can use it for this and for that. Okay, so here are some pictures we made in the paper with Kallas so this is about Hill's, it's Hill's equation that we are talking about. The left picture is the diagram, which is also Mathieu, because it's the linear behavior is given by the linearized equation. So in the shaded areas, the trivial periodic solution is not stable, hyperbolic, and on the boundaries you have corresponding bifurcations. So first, for example, this holds for all these things, and you see that this is the what can I say? This is the perturbed Mathieu case with higher order term and higher harmonic. And here is the square case where you have a bang bang motion of the point of suspension. So we wrote some papers about that. Also, their singularity theory is an important tool, averaging, normalizing first, and then using singularity theory, and prove that that these things that are here are stable, are persistent. And what's interesting to say is that when you do in all these cases, and you look for example in the first tongue which comes from one quarter, this A is then one quarter and B is zero, and you look near that point, you'd find just a period doubling. And on the covering space, it's an equivalent pitchfork. This is a well-known thing, but it happens for all the subharmonic bifurcations. It's a good way to look at it. Okay, so this is the Botafumeiro revisited. So this is a Poincaré map in the system, period map. And then you see indeed that the origin has become hyperbolic, and here too. And these two irises of the eye, these are pupils, what you call them, these two things, are the 2 pi, the 4 pi periodic solution that the Botafumeiro is in. So this is a simple picture of that, and you see how it becomes when the perturbation becomes too large. You see lots of things here. I didn't quite understand what was primary and secondary quasi-periodic, but you see, I think you see them in this picture. You see primary and secondary ones. Is that true? And you also see chaos. I think not. People have not really understood what this kind of chaos means. If I'm, maybe you know this better, Jan. I don't. I think what you like to know is that it fills a dense orbit fills something of positive area. But I do not know of good examples yet. Okay. So we go from gaps to tongues. You saw already if you look at these pictures, I go back to these pictures, then very often people take physicists, for instance, they take horizontal lines, they take the perturbation parameter constant, and then they talk about gaps in the spectrum. And the claim is that it's better to include one parameter more and to talk about tongues. And so this is this also. Then you get a good collapse theory of gaps. I come to the quasi-periodic case immediately, and you get singularity theory, and these singularities are labeled A, 2k minus 1. When you look at them for a little while. And what I want to do now is briefly talk about the quasi-periodic analog. So now we have still Hill's equation. Now I take really Hill's equation because it's linear. And we take the function f, the forcing function ft, quasi-periodic with n frequencies, and then when you analyze this system by averaging, normalizing, then the average system does not see anymore whether it originally was periodic or quasi-periodic. So you get the same geometry, the same singularity theory for the tongues, but the rest of the geometry is more complicated. The tongues now become dense. And we wrote a paper about the nonlinear case that Heinz Hansmann, Angel Jorba, Jordi Villanueva, and Florian Wagner, and try to see how this is organized. And it is one of the things that you have here is a kind of infinite regress. Within gaps, you get a repetition of the entire scenario. It's also like in the papers of Jean Schiner and this paper by Basens and Mackay and Guggenheimer. They also talk about they talk about bubbles in bubbles. They are very complicated, but also very general thing. So one of the interesting things here is that this Hill's equation then also satisfied as the also acts as the eigenvalue equation of Schrödinger operator with quasi-periodic potential. And of course the letters are differently chosen normally. I mean this T becomes an X and X becomes Q or or a U, I don't know, but I mean, there's a special aspect then in the, that the equations are the same. And I want to mention a few papers by Moser and Paschel and also by Eliasson, talked about this, this, this equation. And I'd like to mention this paper by, which we wrote with Puch, Joachim Puch and Carla Simo. We were suggested to do this by a mathematical physicist, by Hans Jourdain and Dijon, to say, well, if you find this kind of geometry for Hill's equation, please write a paper so that the people in quasi-periodic Schrödinger theory can also know this. And one of the things that you find here then is the same as before you find the Bessel staircase. And so this is nice. And the physicists now have discovered this, not so long yet, and they have the word Cantor spectrum, and they see these Bessel staircases. So that's a good sign, I think. okay. Yes. So then I come to the last example. It's a kind of example that you can see that it acts as an example. This is a map from R3 to R3. It has the origin as a fixed point, and the eigenvalues go again through the unit circle and again near a resting point, and the remaining eigenvalue goes through one. And this is you very well probably know the analog for vector fields. Because for a vector field, the eigenvalues are on the imaginary axis, and the remaining eigenvalue is zero, and it's called Hopf fold or zero Hopf or Hopf saddle node bifurcation, and it's all in all the books. Kuznetsov, Guggenheimer, Holmes, many people have written about this, and the pictures are more or less well known. I should have, of course, included them here. And what we have done is take the normal forms that were given. By this, use a Tarkin's normal form theorem that approximates a map by a diffeomorphism. It's a time bound map of a diffeomorphism, and we wrote a couple of papers, and they are not here. Here are the motivating papers in the climate research, because if you look in climate research, what people do is take, for instance, a PDV. PDE, I should say, because we are here in England, an English-speaking country, partial differential equation, and you take, for instance, a Galerkin projection, and end up with something high, we say high, finite dimensional. These people call it low dimensional, because they think of infinity, but we are very modest people. I think that an ordinary differential equation in 80 dimensions is not too small. We can attack that, but what people have been doing is, Alex Sterk and Lato Vitro, we are both students of Carlos and me, have been looking at center manifolds and seen phenomena which look like Hopf-Saddle-node bifurcation for maps. So this is one of the reasons why we study this for its own sake. And then this is one of the things that comes out. This is a diagram of Lyapunov exponents. And the clue, the we should say, the color counts the number of exponents that are zero, positive and negative, and so on. So the blue color corresponds to two negative and one zero Lyapunov exponents, so this is an invariant circle, attracting circle. And the green, I think it's green, I'm colorblind, corresponds to two torus. It has two eigenvalues, two Lyapunov exponents, zero. And there is also chaos there. I have a legend, for those who are interested, I have a legend of the all the color code is in a separate file. I can call it, not now, but if there are questions about it, give it to you. And so what you see here is that if you have, this is not the entire parameter space, it's just a section. And we wrote a lot of papers in this vein, trying to find out about the resonance web and about the bubble structure which is there. And you find all the complexity that you would expect and more. And also here there is some self-similarity sitting in the problem. So the interesting thing here is that you see something which is also reminiscent of the Ruel-Tarkin's scenario. Well, the word scenario usually means that you have only one parameter, isn't it? You have Landau Lifshitz scenario and you have Real Tag scenario. These people talk about one parameter families. I thought, Amadeo, that you were also talking about one parameter families going through some space. But this also here people talk. So Landau Lifshitz go to the quasi periodic points on this line here. This line is a line of hot bifurcation. You go from a circle to a torus. But for a map, you go from an attracting circle to an attracting torus. For the differential equation, you go from an attracting two torus to an attracting three torus. And on the three torus, you can have chaos. This is what Real and Tarkin say. And in this picture, if you use two parameters, you can see that these theories are just united and unified in one theory. If you take one parameter more and you look a little bit, so you can still speak about scenarios if you want to, but then you look at curves which go through this plane, or even higher dimensional space. This is a little bit of dynamics. If you somewhere in this picture here, it's sitting somewhere in this box upstairs. You have this kind of phenomenon. Upstairs you see two projections of a quasi-periodic attractor. So this is a map. It's not a periodic solution. It's a map, and the map has an invariant circle, which is numerically speaking quasi-periodic. And then there's some kind of bifurcation. It's like this. It's like a big sphere. And the left-hand picture looks from the North Pole, and the right-hand picture looks from the side of the sphere. This kind of picture. It's a big torus which is inside the sphere. And if this invariant circle goes through a bifurcation, kind of set of node bifurcation, you get an unstable invariant circle, I should say. And what we think is the picture below, that they are they form the closure of the unstable manifold of that thing. We think that this is a quasi-periodic Heynon-like strange attractor, but we cannot prove this. This is a theory on this thing. It's not yet developed far enough. We found in the paper here, the next in these papers, we did find the periodic an analog. That's kind of standard at this moment, not completely standard. But you can use these theories by Mora, Diaz, and Lighting, Young, and so on. You can find it. But the quasi-periodic analog, the theory around quasi-periodic, anon-like strange attractors, is not very far developed. But you can still believe that this is one. In that sense, this is experimental. Okay. So what we find is a kind of coexistence of periodicity, including resonance, quasi-periodicity and chaos in the product of state space and parameter space. We find, of course, bifurcations, phase transition singularities. The non-resonances, they are in KN theory. Of course, there's more. There's also Liouville, and there's a lot more. But I like to refer to a few things that we have been writing or are writing. There's one paper in Bulletin of the AMS, 2004, and there's also a Catalan analog of it, for those who can read. And there's this book, Quasi-Periodic Bifurcation, the Geometry of KN, which is a kind of book where singularity theory and KN theory are united in a certain sense, and it can say that this is the theory, background theory, also for the unification of Hopf-Landau-Lifshitz and Real Tarkin's, which is the background of this whole thing. let me say one thing more. Oh yeah. So the idea is you can say why are you looking at such complicated things? Well, the thing that we have seen is that when you go one step further than our standard now in bifurcation theory books, the inconsistent books, you get into this stuff. you get this fractalization, this cantilization of the thing. When you look at this picture, you see only a few strong resonances. This is with the denominator 5. But of course this is a fractal set, and if your computer is more precise, you will see more and more and more gaps. So if you want to do continuation things here, and you go the wrong direction, you can't do it. So this is kind of thing that you have to incorporate when modeling. Okay. So I did not include that in this talk, but we have written quite a number of papers on KM theory in between. And if you are interested, you just look on my website. And they all start with Moses' 67 paper, and they try to find parametrized versions of that. Moses, and in fact, we unite also the theories of Arnold, matrices depending on parameters, and transversality theory, which is related to that, and this theory of Moses. So that Moses finds, if he has a system with a quasi-periodic torus, then he has to modify the system. He has to find external terms. And what we have done in the course of the years is say, okay, we start with a system that depends on sufficiently many parameters, and then prove that it is within this system. This is the basic message. And of course, then you need a lot of parameters, and the question is always how to get rid of them. But fortunately, you have Fruchtmann now on the generalist condition, so you can always go within such a large Fersal system. You can go with generic subfamilies to describe your favorite system. So this is how I like to end. I have this often, not always, there is a fractal geometry has infinite regress, then a nowhere dense set is going into meager, and these things occur at a larger scale modeling. I like to also refer to the paper of Graham Tarkens, which seems to have been somewhat forgotten. And we wrote together with Hasselblad, we were the editors of a handbook, Dynamical System Volume 3, which is Volume 2 is by Fiedler, and Volume 1 and 1A and 1B are by Hasselblad and Katok. And I think the volume that we wrote is a welcome addition to the entire overview. Well, that I think is all I wanted to tell you by myself.